Come we that love the Lord, and let our joys be known. Join in a song with sweet accord. Join in a song with sweet accord. And thus around the throne, and thus surround the throne. We're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, Zion, the beautiful city of God.
You know, every time we sing that song, we are saying that we're moving. We're not here to stay. We're marching. And it's a real challenge. Well, this morning, we want to look at a character who never lost sight of that. In fact, a couple characters that never lost sight of that. They were down there in Egypt. In fact, they were there for 430 years. But these people believed that someday they would leave that land. They weren't there to stay. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 46. We're going to try to finish Genesis today and try to do it without making it real late. Is there something wrong with that clock? I better go by this one. All right. I guess one thing that impresses me, whether I'm reading the Bible or whether I'm studying history, is the influence of one person. You know, one person can just simply gather up by the faith and the inspiration and the force of his spirit-filled character, and can carry a whole group of people along. I think of Samuel. You know, Samuel comes there at the end of the Judges when public confidence and faith in God was at an all-time low. Just read those last couple chapters of Judges. I mean, it's just a terrible picture of depravity, even though they had the law. And by the time Samuel's life is over, you have a whole nation that has tremendous confidence in leadership and faith in God. Then you have Saul. When Saul's done, it has taken a nosedive and it's down. He's taken the whole nation into chaos again. Then you have David, who again, by the force of his grace-filled life, take the nation back up again. And then after David, you have Solomon. Down it goes. And so that's how it is. And so in this, I guess the thing that has really blessed me in my study of these last five chapters of Genesis is here you have a man, Joseph, and the title of the lesson this morning is Freedom to Bless. You have the word blessing rather frequently through here, and even when you don't have the word, you have pictures of blessing all through these chapters, basically because of this one person. God says, the Bible says, God sent a man into Egypt. That's all you need. All you need is a man. And I guess I'm calling this morning, in our homes, in our church, in our community, that we have men. Men who are true men. Like Jacob. We're going to see that Jacob actually had really become a man by the end of his life. And Joseph, certainly. And talking about dealing directly with God. I mean, you have to remember that Joseph had no Bible. He had no church service to inspire him. He had no parents down there in Egypt. He had no peers to discuss his problems with and get some insight. He had no accountability, humanly speaking. He had no biographies to read. He had nothing except his concept of God. And that's all it took. And I guess I wonder today why, with all the advantages we have a service like this every Sunday. We have Bibles galore. We have friends to encourage us. We have books to read. We have many more examples to rely on than what Joseph did as to what happens when people trust God and what happens when they don't. And yet we have so few leaders. The Bible says those who receive abundance of grace and the gift of righteousness shall reign in life. Romans 5:17. Where are the kings? Where are the priests among God's people that don't need to be cajoled and warned and scolded and inspired by others constantly? I guess that's the thing that really troubles me. Is there anything at all to this thing of Christianity in your life? Are you a self-starter? When I say self-starter, I don't mean from your own self, but is there something in you, like there was in Joseph, that the people around you are drawn toward God, away from all of that, to something higher and greater, and they're marching to Zion because you're marching to Zion, and you have caught their interest and imagination and attention and faith and have carried it along. Would to God that every person would like that. But it seems like in our churches, we tend to have this group of people that you drag along. You drag them along. And you've just got to constantly keep dragging and prodding and warning and all of that. I wish I could say that every person sitting on these benches have demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're kings and priests unto God. All right, we want to talk about blessing today. I think it's wonderful that this book of the Old Testament, before the law, ends with blessing because of one person, or maybe two, Jacob. It ends with blessing. You'd have thought before the law that the thing would have just kept going down. But you had a man, his name was Joseph, and he had the freedom to bless. Now, I'm going to put my outline on the board, but I'm not going to put the references because I'm going to sort of, obviously, if we're going to cover five chapters, we're not going to go through this verse by verse, or we will have to go by that clock. So we're going to be sort of jumping from place to place here in Genesis. So I'll give you my outline, and I guarantee you, as I've worked through this first part, you're going to say, my oh my, if he takes that much time for the other three, we are going to be here till a long time. But I guarantee you this first part, the five chapters are mostly about blessings for Jacob. Okay? And then the second point we'd like to look at is blessings for Pharaoh. I mean, everybody got blessed in this passage. It's just a wonderful ending to the book. Blessings for Egypt. And then last of all, blessings for the family. And those are the points. Those last three points, the first point will be more than they all put together. So, like a lot of us readers, it's sometimes good to go to the end of the book to get the perspective to read the rest. So let's turn to the end of the book. What was the secret of Joseph's amazing priesthood, if you please? For his family, for the nation, I mean, just wherever this man was, people came in contact with God. What was it that made him this way? Well, let's look at verses 19. He's speaking, of course, to his brothers, and we'll come to this near the end of the message again. But we want to look at, there's a threefold set of ingredients that went into the life of Joseph. And it gets summarized here in these two verses. He says to them, of course, you remember, they're coming to him and they're saying, our father told us that you're supposed to treat us right, you know, and we're coming, we're afraid of what's going to happen now that he's dead. And Joseph says unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? He says, you don't need to fear me because the first element of my character is that I leave the righting of all wrongs to God. Now that's true character. Of course, we remember that we're told in Romans that we're to give place unto wrath, that God will take care of things. And that was a pattern of Joseph's life. Whether it was Mrs. Potiphar, whether it was the butler, I mean, he had the power finally to deal with all those people, and he dealt with none of them. He said, I am not in the place of God. And I think that is a very basic mark of Christian character. You were talking about beating your swords into plowshares and all of that. I couldn't help but remember what Walter Beachy told me of Plain City here. Maybe I gave this here a couple weeks ago. They have a man who was from Sudan, who lived in their community, became a Christian, joined their church, and then went back to Sudan, and he's planted about three or four churches, Christian churches in Sudan, right in the middle of a Muslim territory. And his greatest powerful message to those people is this. When he tells them he's a Christian and he was in America, their first response is, the Christians in America are warmongering people. They're awful people. They're the ones that are the most militaristic of all the people, the Christians in America. We don't want to hear it. And he says, that is true for most of the Christians in America. But he said, you have never heard of a little group called Mennonites. They have a 500-year history of never using violence against anybody. And he says, that peace testimony is the strongest testimony toward Muslim, for Muslim people, because that's inconceivable to them. That's inconceivable to them that there could be a group of people that have resolved their differences and have related to their enemies without ever using violence. And he said that is the most attractive feature of Christianity in a Muslim country. Leaving the righting of wrongs to God. That's a very basic characteristic here of Joseph. And then he goes on to say, but as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good. The second aspect of this man's outstanding character was to be able to see God's providence in man's malice. Now this is heavy stuff. To leave the righting of wrongs to God and to see God's providence in man's malice and hatred. All right? But God meant it for good to bring to pass that as it is this day to save much people alive. Verse 21, we get the third aspect of his character. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he spake comfortably unto them, and he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. The third aspect of this man's character is to repay evil not only with forgiveness, but with practical affection. Now those are three outstanding characteristics. And because of that, this man was able to bless everybody. His father, the king, the greatest monarch in the world, the country of Egypt, and his family. All right? The secret of freedom is a forgiving, benevolent faith in God. That's how I tried to summarize it. That opens up the wells of God's grace. His grace then can flow without any frustration. Paul says, I don't frustrate the grace of God. He was talking about something else at that point, but this is applicable. When you have a man like that, who leaves all the righting of wrongs to God, who sees God's providence in the worst actions of men, and repays evil not only with forgiveness, but with benevolent generosity and practical affection. When you see a man like that, with that kind of love flowing out of his being, that kind of trust in God, you're going to have a man that just spreads grace all around, wherever he is. All right? On the other hand, the tendency of mankind, and yes, too many Christians, is to do the opposite of all of this. To think that they have to in some way right the wrongs that have been committed. To somehow blame other people rather than see God at work in what other people are doing. And to repay evil with retaliation. And in Matthew 18, verse 34, and I don't want to spend a lot of time here with this introduction, but in Matthew 18, 34, remember it says that the unforgiving servant was delivered to the tormentors. Now, I don't know what that means exactly, but you know, a person who does not live the way Joseph lived, and I've had enough experience with this myself to know that what I'm going to tell you is true, is indeed living constantly with tormentors. Joseph did not. There's no evidence here that Joseph lived with tormentors. But the people who do not live the way he lived, they live with tormentors. Let me name some of them that I've listed. Bitterness, distrust of others, they develop a cynical attitude, a negative outlook on life, habits that they can't conquer, loneliness and friendlessness, crippling inferiority, fear of the future, they're always feeling this impending doom because they don't have this working the other way, inability to experience intimacy, a sense of futility with all of life, an inability to feel forgiven for their own sins, no sense of direction, feelings of worthlessness, and unfulfilled desires. And the list probably could go on. And I'm sorry to tell you, but that is the picture. One or all of those characteristics are the picture of many, many people today, even people who call themselves Christians. But Jesus said, and we had the Lord's Prayer here last Sunday discussed, the only part of the Lord's Prayer that He comments on when it's all done is the part about forgiving your enemies. He doesn't comment on anything else. But after He's done with the Lord's Prayer, giving that, He goes back and picks up this one thing and says, if you forgive others, then God will forgive you. Or in other words, if you set other people free like Joseph did, then God will set you free from this list of things plus a lot of other things that people are constantly bound by. All right. Trust and forgiveness. Trust in God and forgiveness of people freed Joseph to lavish His grace on everyone. Pharaoh told Joseph to say to his brothers and his family, come unto me, I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. All right, now here are the blessings. Let's talk about them. Blessings for Jacob. Generally speaking, we would say that Joseph was able to give his father a happy ending to a very tumultuous and upsetting life. All right? So, let's start here with chapter 45 and read a few verses. We'll start with chapter 45, verse 26. Jacob speaking. I'm sorry, verse 25. And they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive and he's governor of all the land of Egypt. And Jacob basically had a heart attack. And they told him, he didn't believe them. And they told him all the words of Joseph which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba. Now, that's interesting because in all the other situations in Jacob's life, all the major decisions he made, God appeared to him and told him what he was supposed to do. All right? Before he left Laban, the Lord appeared to him. When he was on his way to Haran, the Lord appeared to him. When he went back to Bethel from Shechem, the Lord appeared to him and told him to do that. And here he has no word from the Lord. He just simply has a word from his son that he's supposed to go. And I looked at that and I thought, well, that's sort of instructive. We're often in that situation. We don't have any real clear word from heaven as to what we're supposed to do. But the circumstances all pointed this direction. And Jacob started moving. And what happened when he started moving? Well, God comes then and meets him. And I like that. Because my advice to people is get a sense of direction from what you can see and with the doors that are opening and so on, and start moving. You know, God can direct something that's moving. He can't sometimes direct too well if it's not moving. And so God appears to him and he says in verse 2, he went to Beersheba, he offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. I think he was looking for a word from the Lord before he went any further. And God spake unto Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt. And now we have something added to this covenant promise that has been following the whole way through the book of Genesis, that God was going to bless Abraham and his descendants, and out of his descendants, he was going to bless the whole earth, and he was going to make a great nation of them. He says here, there I will make of thee a great nation. So this nation is going to be born in Egypt. Now, when you look at the situation, that does make sense, because if they had stayed in the land of Canaan, probably the tendency would have been for them to assimilate with the heathen. They had enough problems with that when they came back to the land of Canaan. But God's going to take this nation, And he's going to take them down into Egypt. And we're going to see here later that God even used the instincts of the Egyptians that considered themselves the greatest people on the earth, and these people who kept cattle, you know, they're just nomads. He used that to isolate them so they could live there in Goshen by themselves, and there they could prosper and become a great nation before he took them out. All right, that was the promise here. And I will surely... And Jacob probably had some hesitations about going down to Egypt because the people's experience with Egypt up until this time were never very good. And I think he had come to right faith in God, and he knew that Canaan was the place where God wanted him to be. And he thought, well, you know, God can supply our needs here in Canaan. I mean, should I really go down to Egypt? But God says, I'll make a great nation of you. And then he says, and I will surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So go down to Egypt. God, that's where God's going to make a great nation, and he's going to bring you out. You're coming back to Canaan, or your people are coming back to Canaan. And you're going to be down there where Joseph can close your eyes in death, and you can have an honorable death and burial. All right? So he's no longer hesitant. He goes on, and then we have a whole list of the people that went with him. And we're not going to go into that. There were 70 of them. That's how many there were. And it's interesting, that word 70 runs through the Bible there over and over again. 70 is an important number. And it's sometimes referred back to this. 70 people went into Egypt. All right? Well, in 46, verse 29 and 30, Joseph hears they're coming. Judah is sent to direct them into Goshen. They were told they were going to go there to Goshen. And so they... tell Joseph, and Joseph makes ready his chariot. He went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen, and presented himself unto him, and fell on his neck, and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive. And so we have this blessing of him finally meeting this lost son. All right? Well, chapter 47. We're talking about blessings on Jacob. Chapter 47... Verse 27, and Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew, and multiplied exceedingly. Now, they were there for the last 5 years of the famine, and after the famine was over, they were on the Nile Delta. That's where Goshen was, on the Nile Delta, where as fertile and well-watered land as there was in the land of Egypt. And there they prospered. All right? And there Jacob died. Verse 29. Or verse 28, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time grew nigh that Israel must die, and he called his son Joseph and said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. But I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do also as thou hast said. And he said, swear unto me, and he swear unto him, and Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head. Okay, so you see this very, very, I mean, Jacob has really become a very, very godly person at this point. I mean, this whole thing is just laced with references to his prayer, to his sacrifices, to his blessings, to his faith, to his trust in God. And so he wants the very last thing about him to testify to his belief in God's promise. Don't bury me here. Take me back to Canaan. That's where we're going to be. And that's where I want to be. All right? And now Hebrews picks this up. And it quotes the Septuagint, actually. It says here, he bowed himself upon his bedstead. The Septuagint, I understand, says upon his staff. Now, I'm not quite sure. Maybe he did a little bit of both. I don't know. But anyway, and God points this out as well. Let's turn to it. It's Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21. It reads like this: by faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. And so then that's the next thing we have. We have his blessing of Joseph. Sons. All right? Now, we're going to talk about chapter 48 and 49 here. This is a very amazing thing that this man prophesied all these things, and they came true just as he prophesied them. I think Jacob, like any other godly father, was really concerned. Here he is at the end of his life. He's dying. They tell Joseph, your father's dying. He shows up with these two boys to be there when his father died. And I know I'm getting near enough the end of life to know that one of my greatest concerns right now is continuity. In my family, in this congregation, when you get to the end, that's your concern. You know you're going to lay this down. And he's concerned about this. And I think Jacob must have prayed. He must have thought about the character of his boys. He must have thought about their needs. They must have thought about their strengths, their weaknesses. And we're going to see when he gives the prophecy, it's not just a bunch of blessing that he talks about. He talks about their needs. He talks about their problems. He talks about the weaknesses of their character and what he sees happening in their lives. I think that's wonderful. I wonder how many parents do this. Not every parent has a chance to do this. Some parents drop over with a heart attack. Hopefully they'll do it before that. But how many parents have communicated to their children the passion they have for their future? He does that. He's concerned that when he dies, he has communicated everything he has to communicate to his children about what he sees for their future. I think this is beautiful. So Joseph comes with his children. And, let's just read down through and make a few comments as we go. And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, behold, thy father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, of course, Manasseh was the oldest. Ephraim was the youngest of the two. And one told Jacob and said, behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee, and Israel strengthened himself and sat up upon the bed. And Jacob said unto Joseph, and now he gives his history. And how he now sees his entire life. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan. That's when he had the latter experience. And Jacob learned, let's do a little review here. Jacob learned that God, in fact, does have dealings with men. There's a very, very active, ongoing communication between heaven and earth in regards to every man on this earth, or at least every person that will listen. And he said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and I will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now, thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, they're mine. Now you see what happens here is he takes these two boys and they become part of the 12 tribes. He says, Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh do not belong to you. They belong to me. Now the rest of the children you have will be yours, but these boys are mine. And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine. You can have the rest. And shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. As for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little way to come and unto Ephrathah, and I buried her there by the way of Ephrathah, the same as Bethlehem. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? The man was practically blind. He was speaking theoretically about these boys, and then he realized who they were. And Joseph said, these are my sons, whom God hath given to me. And he says, bring them, I pray thee, unto me. I will bless them. I mean, they're mine. They're my children. They're not yours, Joseph. They're mine. And so he brought them, and he kissed them, and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God has showed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself into the face of the earth. And then he took his father's hands. His father's practically blind. He made sure his father's hand was on Manasseh. His right hand was on Manasseh. He was the oldest. And his left hand was on Ephraim. And here when he prayed this prayer, Joseph realized that he had done this. And he tried to change the hands. And Jacob said, No. This is the way it's going to be. The older is the one that is going to be the powerful one. And we know that that was the case because the leaders came out of Ephraim. We don't hear almost anything about Manasseh. I mean, this was an amazing prophecy. Joshua was from the tribe of Ephraim. Samuel was from the tribe of Ephraim. And then we had the tremendous apostasy of Israel. Jeroboam was from the tribe of Ephraim, and Ephraim became a byword of someone who had apostatized from God. and not a good that was not a good name later in Israel, but Ephraim became the name of the northern tribes. So this prophecy was true. Ephraim received the I don't know if I want to say the birthright, but he received the prominent place in the leadership of the family. All right? Let's read the blessing, verse 15. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil. That's the first, by the way, that's the first occurrence of the word redeemed in the whole Bible, right there. And we know that the angel was very likely a pre-incarnation appearance of Christ. And I think that's just really beautiful. He says, Christ salvaged my life. So he says, that angel and that God, bless the lads and let my name be on them. He wants to impart his character to them. Here you see the passion of a true father. And the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. I want the character of Abraham, I want the character of Isaac, and I want my own character to be imposed upon these boys. And let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And then Joseph saw that he's had his hand on the wrong person. Well, you know, God has done this a number of times now in the book of Genesis. It was Isaac instead of Ishmael. It was Jacob instead of Esau. It was Joseph instead of Reuben, we're going to find out. And it's now Ephraim instead of Manasseh. God has His own ways of choosing His people. All right. So now, he goes on now to speak of what's going to happen in the future. And I tried to think what these boys must have thought of when they were standing there listening to this. He's telling them what he sees. And a lot of this is out of their what he saw in their own characters. He's going to say, I saw this in your character, and this is what's going to happen. Now, there is one beautiful thing in here, and that is he speaks of Judah. And we had, in one of our lessons, we had the terrible sin of Judah with Tamar. Now, why in the world is Judah picked out to be such a person with such outstanding blessings pronounced upon him? Well, that gives me hope. Judah changed. That whole experience of his wicked son Ur being slain by the Lord, his wicked son Onan being slain of the Lord, and then his own messing around and tragic behavior with Tamar and how the Lord dealt with him and all that, it seems like he must have changed. Because he's the one that you found out in one of our previous sermons. He's the one that stood and pled and said, let me take upon myself the responsibility and let all these people go free, and I don't want to bring my father's head down in sorrow to his grave. I'll take it all. I'll be the redeemer, if you please, and let the rest of the family go free. I'll take it all on myself. That's quite a man. His experiences in life has made something out of him. And what I'd like to think is these other boys could have done the same thing. Reuben could have repented. I don't know if the Lord would have had the place for Reuben that he would have had. I don't know. But that gives me hope that even though you've messed up, your character can be changed and the future can be changed. But the question is, are you going to repent? Are you going to turn around? Are you going to let God make you a different person so He can give you different promises and predict a different future? Well, let's look at what he has to say. Well, maybe before we do that, this is a little bit risky. I'd like to draw a map of Palestine. It's Palestine. And sort of show you where these tribes ended up. I'm not a very good artist to begin with. And this is a little bit risky, but I'll try it because it'll help you understand a little bit what he's saying here about some of these people. Just bear with me for a little while. Of course, we have our familiar map that everybody should know how to draw. And we have the Sea of Galilee up here. And we have the Jordan. And we have the Sea of Dead Sea. Okay? Now, these people up here, this is Asher. This is where he settled. This is where Naphtali settled. This is where Issachar settled. And this is where Manasseh settled. half of them. And then we have Ephraim. And then we have Dan, although he didn't stay here. At the beginning, he was here. And then we have Benjamin. And we have Judah. And Simeon. On this side of the river, we have Manasseh. We have Gad. And we have Reuben. All right, that's and he's alluding in this passage to some of these places where they were going to be. I find this whole passage just an amazing statement about the future of these people, where they were going to be settled, and all of that. It's not a complete picture, but it's an interesting picture. All right, let's start and just read down through this passage. And Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. And like I said, a lot of this is based on what I think he saw. In fact, he alludes to what he saw in their character. He alludes to things they had done. And I think as parents, it would be very instructive if we would say, now, I see a trait here in your life. It's a good trait. This projects a tremendous future. Build on that good trait. Here's a weakness. If you don't come to terms with that weakness is going to be your undoing. And your future is going to grow out of that characteristic. That's sort of what I see happening here with some of this. All right, let's read it. Verse 3. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Every man feels that way about his first son. My, he had such high hopes with Reuben. But now look at how quickly it goes. Unstable as water. You will not excel. See, it's based on what he saw in his character. He says you're unstable. And then he gives an example of what he's talking about. You know, he committed sin with his mother. Because thou wentest up to thy father's bed and defiledst it. He went up to my couch. All right? We find the whole way through the story, whatever little bit you read about Reuben, this is an amazing statement of the kind of person he was. Ungoverned impulses. Irresolution. When Barak and Deborah went out to fight, this is what the Bible says about Reuben. For the divisions of Reuben, there were great thoughts of heart. He abode among the sheepfolds to hear the bleating of the sheep. For the divisions of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. He didn't go. He couldn't make up his mind to go help his brother. And Jacob saw that weakness in his character, and he said, Reuben, you're not going to excel. All right? The only moment of initiative that we have from Reuben is when you have the situation of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. They were the descendants of Reuben. One of them, or several of them were. All right, so I guess part of my message this morning is, yes, we're talking about blessings. But blessings flow from what we are. What are you becoming? What kind of future could anybody base on your character? Well, it wasn't too good for Reuben, was it? Wasn't too good for Simeon and Levi either. And these were his three oldest sons. One of them should have had the birthright of the family leadership role. Number 5, verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. Now, when you go back to when they destroyed that city treacherously, Jacob doesn't say much. But he never forgot it. He says, in your hearts, there's treachery and there's cruelty. O my soul, come not thou into their secret. Unto their assembly mine honor, be not thou united. Don't mess around with these guys. They are not to be trusted. For in their anger they slew a man. And in their self-will they dig down a wall. That actually in the Amplified Bible says they disabled the oxen. So, you know, they took the animals and they disabled them. And I don't know what they did, but we have some details here as to what they did. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. What's the Lord going to have to do with people like that? He's going to divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. God's going to have to not let these guys get their act together. They're not good fellows. And that's exactly what happened. Simeon never had his own inheritance. He was scattered in Judah. Levi, scattered through the whole land. They were the priests. Now, Levi did redeem himself. Whenever they were there at the golden calf, remember Moses called people to come to his side and help to pass judgment on the rest of them. And it was the tribe of Levi that did that. Now, God kept this prophecy. They did not inherit the land, but he did allow them. The point I'm trying to make here is you can do something about your character. God may still have to do what he said, but when it got done, it was a beautiful thing. They were the priests scattered throughout the land, but they still had to be scattered because of the kind of people they had been. But they did redeem themselves, and God was able to make them a tribe of priests, but they were scattered throughout the land. I said, this is an amazing prophecy to me. All right. Let's go to Judah. Now, Judah's the one that he chooses to be the leader. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. And there again, Judah had redeemed himself. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies, and thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. He is a true leader. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse himself up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawmaker from between his feet, until Shiloh come. Here's this wonderful promise of it's going to come out of the Redeemer, and the person who has the true authority is going to come out of this tribe. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. And then he pictures, somebody mentioned this beautiful age that the prophet spoke about, and in this church there's a little disagreement as to what that's all about, but it's going to be a wonderful time wherever it is. But anyway, here it's pictured. This is going to be such a utopian paradise that you can tether your animal to a vine. The vines are going to be so strong, they'll be like trees in this land. And his ass's colt unto the choice vine. Wine is going to be like water in this land. It's going to be like washing water. You can fill whole tubs of it. And his clothes, he's going to wash them in the blood of grapes. I'm not sure I'd want to do that with my clothes, but anyway, it's a picture of amazing prosperity. His eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. I mean, this is an intoxicating abundance. All right? Beautiful. That's what he predicted, and that's basically how it was with Judah. I mean, I told you that this is what came to pass. Exactly what he said. All right? Now, from here on, until we get to Joseph, we don't get a whole lot, but let's see what we have. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be a haven for ships and a border unto Zion. Now, he wasn't... Where did I put Zebulun? Did I forget him? Well, let's see here. Well, you know, I don't have Zebulun. But he was up in this area. I got something wrong. Up here where the seaports were. He was up in that general area. Okay? Issachar is a strong ass, crouching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good and the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear and became a nation under tribute. He did not conquer his area of the land. He decided, things are so good here, and I'm here among the Sidonians, up here, and I'll just submit myself to them and enjoy the prosperity of the land. Apparently Jacob saw that's the kind of person he was. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way and an adder in the path that biteth the horse's heels. Then I think he must have thought of what God said there in Genesis chapter 3. And he says, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. When he's speaking of the serpent, Jacob has a little aside here where he says, God's going to have a remedy for this serpent.
Verse 19, Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at last. He was on the borderlands here where he was constantly being attacked, but he said, they will never completely conquer him. He will never be assimilated. He shall be victorious, even though a troop comes against him. Out of Asher, his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. He was up there next to the sea, and of course, all the trade and wonderful things he had to bring into the nation. Naphtali is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. Well, let's see. That has to do, it says comely fawns in another translation instead of goodly words. In other words, they were like free mountain people and they never were completely subdued. But of course, he saves the greatest things for Joseph. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. This is his life history. But his bow abode in strength, and his arms and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. That's the first time we have the rock mentioned in the Bible. Even by the God of thy father who shall help thee, and by the Almighty who shall bless thee with blessings from heaven above, blessings from the deep that lieth under, blessings from the breast and of the womb, and blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. And so we have the greatest blessing poured out here on Joseph. And then Benjamin... It says, he shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Saul was from this tribe, and that does sort of describe the kind of person he was. All right, so here's this man. Just blessing upon blessing is poured out on Jacob because of this son Joseph and what he had done for the family. And then finally we have his burial, which you can read. When he dies, they embalm him, which was the royal burial of a pharaoh. And they took his body back to Canaan. And it was such a celebration, the people of the land said, this must have been a great man. And so that's the end of Jacob. That's the kind of attention his life got at the end, because he did learn to trust God. Well, the second thing we were going to talk about is the blessings for Pharaoh. Now here we have the greatest king of all the earth meeting the man who God had chosen to lead his people. You have the meeting of these two very important people. Let's turn to chapter 47 and look at verses 7 through 10. And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. In fact, he gave him a double blessing. You'll find he blessed him at the end. Can you imagine? You know, here's Jacob blessing this greatest monarch of the earth. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, how old art thou? And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage, see, he's a pilgrim, are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their pilgrimage. There, see the emphasis on pilgrimage? And what Jacob is basically saying here is, there's no good in me. I just have been involved in an awful lot of things that aren't at all ideal, and life has not been good the way it should have been and could have been. But God has been my God. And even though by my own initiative, things should have turned out much poorer, by staying with God and responding, God has brought me to where I am. That's, to me, that's beautiful. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. Now, I don't know what that meant. I don't know if Pharaoh, because of that, eventually found peace with God. I don't know. I would like to think that. I would like to think that this blessing was a very, very effective blessing that came upon Pharaoh. But we don't know. All right? Blessings for Egypt. We talked about this once before. And so I don't want to spend a lot of time with it. That's the rest of this chapter, what Joseph did in Egypt. But I want to remind you that here was a man who finally attained what powerful leaders want to attain. And that is absolute power over everything. And Joseph genuinely had it. And most people, if they would have that, when it's all said and done, the people would be in grinding bondage. But at the end of the chapter, we find that they're back farming their own land. He gave them seed. I don't quite know what all was happening here. But the only thing they were required, that was required of them, was 20% of their crops. The other 80% was theirs. They were farming their own land. The picture I have is that this man, because of the kind of person he was, left the people of Egypt in relative freedom and prosperity. And they weren't under. You say, well, 20%, that's a pretty high tax. I think they say if you added up all the sales tax and Pennsylvania state tax and local tax and federal tax and Social Security, I think they say that our tax is somewhere between 35 and 40%. So this is pretty good. That blesses me. Here's a man who had secular authority like nobody almost has ever had and everybody wants. And when Hitler gets it, you know how he acts. And when Mussolini gets it, you know how he acts. And when Mao Zedong gets it or Stalin or... This turned out differently. Because we had a man in Egypt, and he blessed Egypt. He blessed his dad, blessing upon blessing upon blessing Jacob experienced from his son. He blessed Pharaoh. He blessed the whole land and left it in much better shape than any other person with the authority that he had would have left it. And then finally, we have the blessings for the family. We have those references, and we must quickly close here, where they got the best land in Egypt, but he left them with something even better. Would you turn to chapter 50? You know they come to him and they say that their father commanded before he died that they were supposed to say to Joseph, forgive, I pray thee, now the trespass of thy brethren and their sin. We have no record that Jacob ever said that, but apparently he did. Or they're trying it hard to make Joseph believe he said it so they would be forgiven. And anyway, this is what they say. Look at this. So shall you say, forgive, I pray thee, now the trespass of thy brethren and their sin. They have never said that before. Joseph finally secures a genuine confession from his brothers. For they did unto thee evil. They're admitting this now. Now they put it in the mouth of their dad to be sure, but they're admitting this. And now we pray thee, forgive thy trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. They're saying, we're God's servants. We have sinned. We want forgiveness. That's tremendous. Anybody that can secure that from a person who has done wrong has given them the greatest blessing that they can ever receive. And Joseph managed to get that from his brothers without, you know, making them say it. They came to that. It was right at the very end. They finally came to that. And they offered to become slaves. And Joseph won't have it. He says, I'm going to nourish you. You're not going to be my slave. And I was thinking of John chapter 15 where Jesus said, I have not called you servants. Now we call ourselves servants. We say, Lord. And he says, yeah, you're going to be my friends. Because a servant does not know what his Lord does, but a friend does, and I'm going to tell you everything that you need to know that I know. That's beautiful. When you come to the place finally where you say, I'm willing to be a slave, then you become truly free. And Joseph says, I will nourish you. I'm going to look out for your welfare. Beautiful type of Jesus. And then he leaves them with a promise that they're going back to the land of Canaan. He says, don't bury me in Egypt. Just like his dad said, put me in a coffin and keep my body because someday you're going back. And I want you to take me along. And every time through those 430 years that they saw that coffin, I don't know if it was mummified and it was open, they could actually go there and look at Joseph. I don't know, or if it was just a coffin there. But every time they saw that coffin, they remembered that they were sojourners in the land of Egypt. They were pilgrims. They were not there to stay. Do you remember that? Joseph was very concerned that they would remember that they did not belong in Egypt. You do not belong here either. You're just a passing through, like the song says. Do you have something to remind you of that? Do you keep that alive in your thinking? Is that how you live? A tourist from America was one time visiting a godly person in Europe. He was astonished to see that this person was living in a room that had a few books and a table and a bench. He said to the man, where is your furniture? Where's yours? Mine? I'm just a visitor here. So am I. And here at the end, Joseph leaves this powerful reminder. Don't become comfortable in Egypt. You're not here to stay. Don't look at me. Look at God and trust Him. And his last words to his brethren were, you can read them in verse 24, God will surely visit you. Joseph had many experiences of God's visitation in his life. And he said, God is going to visit you and he's going to bring you out of this land. And don't you ever forget it. The lesson of the morning is the freedom to bless. And Joseph's life has been a tremendous example of someone who never lost his trust in God and said, I'm not God. He's in charge. I'm not going to make this right. I'm going to trust that to the Lord. And I'm going to forgive you, and I'm going to bless you. That's freedom. Does anybody have any comments on the message this morning?